Hey, poker people, it's Sky Matsuhashi, and this is the Smart Poker Study Podcast. In last week's episode, I discussed how I prepare for live poker tournaments. I also gave you my trusty Evernote document filled with important top-of-mind ideas. Hey, poker people, I love you for all that you do. The tweets, the retweets, the emails that you send in daily, and telling a friend about the show, all of that stuff, I owe all the podcast growth to you. So please keep on keeping on with that support. And in last week's episode, I said that I was going to right the ship of all of my Colossus failures from the past, and I succeeded! Yep, I made my first WSOP cash ever in this year's Colossus number 3, and I'll be talking about that today. I'll also talk some strategy with a couple of key hands from the tournament, and some live MTT lessons that I learned. Please visit the show notes page for everything I discussed today, along with screenshots and links at www.smartpokerstudy.com/pod142. Okay, let's get right to it. Gambate!
And now for our feature presentation.
So, of course, as you know, the WSOP every year is held at the Rio in Las Vegas. My wife and I actually took my wife for the first time this year. We flew in, we Ubered it over to the Gold Coast, which is directly across the street from the Rio. And in Vegas this year, it was nice weather. It was hot, of course, and sunny, but it wasn't too hot like previous summers. Some summers, oh man, I sweat my butt off while I'm there. Not too bad this time, though. And interesting, I didn't realize it before. My wife did a little Google search, and we walked to Chinatown, which is only a 10-minute walk away from the Rio and from the Gold Coast. So we went shopping, got some, you know, Chinese bakery goods and stuff like that. And there's also a bowling alley in the Gold Coast, which it was my first time there. A ton of lanes, a humongous place. And speaking of the bowling alley, that's where we actually had the Smart Poker Study meetup. And it was fun. It was 2 p.m. this past Saturday, and it was in the middle of Colossus Flight C. And, I'll get to that in just a little bit. But the people that we had at the meetup was me and my wife, and only two other people. Dr. Trisha Cardiner joined us. You remember her. We did the interview with her, episode 139. She's an author, a mindset coach, and a great poker player herself. And actually, while she's there, she's spending the entire summer at the World Series. She's giving away free stuff all summer long. So if you're there, make sure you follow her on Twitter at Dr. Trisha Cardiner. The other day, I think it was yesterday, she actually gave out one of my books, a signed copy of my book, just for finding her at whatever tournament she was playing in at the time. So she tweets those out. So follow her so you can win some stuff from her. You can also get $20 off of her procrastination course. You could do that by visiting www.peakpokermindset.com and using offer code WSOP2017. And I love this course. You guys heard me talk about it before. I highly recommend it to anyone who feels that procrastination is an issue in your life. Take the course. I really recommend it. You get $20 off using that code. And the other person that joined us was Andrew Piper. You might know him as BikeKing19 on YouTube. He does vlogs. He twitches his play, I guess you could say. He does Twitch streams for his play on ACR. Really cool guy. It was nice to meet him. So I finally got to meet Dr. Trisha Cardiner and Andrew Piper together. Another listener named David O, he came by, but he didn't see us. I don't know. He walked past us. I didn't recognize him. So we missed each other. And then also Ralph is a listener. I met him later on. We hung out during a break in the Colossus. He was playing with me, not at the same table, but at the same flight E right there. So we hung out on the break for a little bit. So that was the meetup, and it was a lot of fun. I'll do another one next year, of course. Hopefully more people will join us, and maybe I'll pick a better time, not right in the middle of a big tournament. Maybe I'll do like an evening thing. I don't know. We'll work that out later. No worries. But it was a lot of fun. It was really nice meeting everybody while I was there. And another thing, before we get to the tournaments, there is a ton of cash game action. No Limit Hold'em, PLO, mixed games galore. I didn't play any of those. I just played No Limit Hold'em 1-3 is what I played. But they also have 2-5, 5-10. They just have so many games going on there. And from what I saw, the tables that I was observing and when I was playing my 1-3, it was actually quite, I don't want to say bad players, but just pretty weak players. Tons of limping and then calling $20 bets. I mean, just just very passive, stationy kind of play. So if you want to make some money at the cash games, I recommend the Rio, especially during the World Series. During the regular year, or not during the regular year, during the other parts of the year, I don't know if the cash games are good at the Rio. I only have experience during the World Series, but the World Series brings in, or it attracts so many weekend warriors and so many just recreational players. They play the tournaments, and then when they get busted out or before the tournaments, they'll play the cash game. So they're displaying their same kind of recreational, having fun, stationy, passive kind of play that they use in tournaments. They do it in the cash games as well. So, really playing those 1-3 games, I really recommend it. Very loose and stationy, you know? And one hand, it was pretty interesting. I flopped quad threes, you know. I was dealt pocket threes in the small blind. There was a min open to $6, just to two big blinds. And I overcalled, and we went four-way to the flop. And I actually thought, before the flop hit, I actually thought, what will I do if I flop quads, because I was in the small blind? And the answer was simply to check. And then, bam, the flop comes 3-3-7 with two spades. So I hit the quads. Lovely. Now, 3-3-7. Great. I have quads. But what kind of hands am I going to get value out of? I mean, it was mostly passive play except for a min bet preflop. You don't expect anybody to have aces or kings here. Possibly the preflop raiser, but he only raised it to $6. He was probably just doing it with a pocket pair of his own or like Broadway cards or something, you know? So that flop came, flopping quads. I checked and I called the preflop raiser's C-bet. And one other person called and there was a fold. So three of us to the turn. Now, the turn came an offsuit ace. There was still the flush draw possible with two spades on the board. And with that ace, I figured there would be another bet by somebody floating the flop with an ace for themselves. You know, on the 3-3-7, it's really not an easy board to hit. Lots of aces, ace king, maybe not ace queen, but ace jack, ace 10, ace 9, any other ace could come along on the flop just hoping to turn an ace, you know, for some good showdown equity. So checking seemed like the best way to get value from bluffs with that turn ace. And anybody who might, you know, bet that ace, maybe bet a seven, maybe bet whatever they might bet. So I checked again and it checks around. So I missed value on the turn. It's a bummer. The river comes a 10 of spades. So the final board ends up reading 3-3-7, ace 10 with three spades. So I basically hope that somebody hit a flush, or even just had the ace and didn't pay or didn't bet on the turn. So I was hoping to get value on the river. So I bet out $30 into the $50 pot and they all folded. What a bummer. I didn't show my hand. I just mucked it. One of the guys said, "Hey, you hit your flush." And I said, "Yep, hit my flush." Whatever. He doesn't need to know that it hit quads and the way I played it. But I really should have bet smaller to induce a bluff here. I finally got aggressive on the three flush and they put me exactly on the flush. So of course they were all going to fold unless they had a flush. And the lesson I learned from this is, you know, checking the turn was still the right play, seeing as how there are plenty of aces in everyone's range. Weak aces, of course, but aces that still could have hit that top pair. But I think I should have bet smaller on the river. The fact that nobody bet the turn meant that there were no aces present, probably no aces, and probably no flush draws either. If there was a turn bet, I likely would have check raised and gotten more value. As it played out, with the turn checked or being checked around, a smaller super bluffy bet of like $15, I could have gotten paid off by a weak pair or like a weak pair of like fours or five, something like that, or even a pair of sevens, or even a rivered pair of tens right there. And then who knows, somebody could have even woken up with a bluff, trying to bluff me off my hand, but it didn't work. Bet 30, didn't get paid off. But, you know, learned a good lesson from that. So when it comes to the Colossus, I played on Flight A, which was Friday at 10 a.m., didn't cash in it. For those of you who don't know, the Colossus has a 10 a.m. start and a 4 p.m. start, two different flights each day. So I played Flight A on Friday. You start with 5,000 in chips, and it's 30-minute levels. It's a turbo, it is a turbo structure with about 10 hands per level on average. And during this Flight A, nothing eventful happened. I won two small pots early on, then I slowly lost as I saw flops, but didn't hit anything. And I couldn't find any good bluffing spots, you know. I was kind of card dead, but I was kind of spot dead as well. I did make it to the break, but when I came back, I had 8 big blinds. I open shoved the small blind with ace-7 offsuit, and I took it down. And the next small blind, so one orbit later, I shoved with ace-queen offsuit, and the big blind called with ace-10 offsuit. So, of course, you know, 8 big blinds, of course I'm shoving. He has an ace. Of course he's calling. It just happens the way it did. He hit a 10, knocked me out, so be it. And I would have played Flight C on Saturday at 10 a.m., but like I said earlier, I had that meetup at 2 p.m. at the bowling alley. So missed Flight C, and I didn't want to play any of the 4 p.m. flights because if things went really well and I made it deep, I would be playing until like 2:30 in the morning. And just to be honest with you, I am not good beyond midnight for playing poker. I'm a morning person. I wake up by 5 a.m. every single morning. So I normally go to bed at the latest 11 a.m. or 11 p.m. Playing after midnight just really kills me, you know? So 10 a.m. starts were what I was going for. So I played Flight E 10 a.m. on Sunday. It was the same structure, of course, 5K chips, 30-minute levels. And for day one, you play 18 levels total on that day. Then you come back for day two with 60-minute levels. So if you can make it beyond day one, that's when the poker tournament really begins and you have a lot of play, depending on your stack size, of course. So with Flight E, I got off to a great start, and I doubled up in the very first level. I won a few smaller pots, and then this happened right here. So, under the gun, I open it to 125, or 2.5 big blinds, with 8-7 suited. It was the 25-50 level. I got 4 callers, including the blinds, so we went to the flop 5 ways, with 625 in the pot. The flop came 9-6 deuce double clubs. So I hit the open in a straight draw with my 8-7. I didn't have a flush draw. I had spades. There were clubs on the board. I bet 500 in the 625. I got a fold. Then the button raised me to 1100. The blinds folded, and then it was up to me to call 600 to win a total pot after my call of 2825. So I only needed 21% equity right here. You know, the 600 divided by 2825. Now, with the open-ended straight draw, I had only 6 outs to the nut straight, and normally, you know, open-ended is 9 outs, but I didn't count the 10 of clubs and the 5 of clubs as outs, just in case my opponent was getting frisky with a flush draw. So with the 6 outs, I only had 12% to win, but I figured that he could be making the smallest raise with a flush draw of his own, or even 2 overcards, because I bet 500, he only raised it an additional 600. It wasn't big at all, you know. So I kind of figured an 8 or a 7 were additional outs for 6 more outs total. So I had a total of 12 outs at 24% equity. I only needed 21, so I made the call. Now, it shouldn't really matter, but I also called for the principle of not allowing somebody to blow me off of a potentially great hand for basically a min raise. I bet 500. He only raised it to an additional 600. So forget that. I'm not folding for just 600 more chips when there's so much to be won right there. And I also had the nut straight draw. If I had just a gut shot, or if I was on the low end of an open ender, I might not have made the call. So now the pot's 28-25, and the turn is a non-club 10, giving me the nut straight. Lovely, you know? I figured this player would bet again, so I just checked to him, and he obliged with a one-third stack bet for about half pot. And of course, I check-raised all in with the nuts, figuring he's not going to fold. And he really wasted no time at all. He said call right away, threw out the chips, turned over the king of clubs, 8 of clubs, so he had a flush draw plus a gut shot plus the overcard king. He didn't know what I had at the time, but maybe he could have assumed that hitting a king would be good if I just had some top pair hand. So I can't blame him for his quick call once he made the semi-bluff, and I think he made a good check raise here. But if I were him, I think I would have checked behind the turn to see a free river card to hit my flush or to hit the gut shot straight. I really think he unnecessarily risked his tournament life with a non-all-in turn bluff. I would have liked the all-in semi-bluff by him to put max pressure on me instead of making a smallish bet, just trying to get me to fold. But I guess maybe he just wanted to put his full stack on the line, hopefully hit the flush and double up. Don't know what he was really thinking, but I ended the hand with twice the starting. Oh, the river bricked out, of course. He didn't hit his flush. So I ended the hand with twice the starting stack of 10,825 chips, which was lovely. And you might be wondering right now how I know all of these details about the hand. It's because I bring my physical poker journal with me and I write down the significant hands that happen. I write in my journal between hands that I'm dealt, I write things like the hands that I'm dealt, the levels, how many chips I have at the beginning of each level, and the action of all the relevant hands. That's how I knew everything that happened in that prior hand right there. And I do this for a couple of reasons. I do it to review my hands later on, to learn from some mistakes possibly. And I also do it to keep me focused on my play. Of course, I can only record important details if I'm paying attention. So the fact that I'm trying to record these important details helps me to focus and to pay more attention. So five hands later, after this 8-7 suited hand, we were just in level two, and I was dealt the beautiful pocket aces. It's so nice when you're in a tournament and you look down to see pocket aces. Well, anytime actually, but in a tournament, it feels especially good for some reason. And the guy that I crippled with that 8-7 suited hand, he shoves for 3.5 big blinds. I was in the big blind at the time, and the small blind, who was a very nice lady named Leanne, she 3-bet ISO raised to 8.5 big blinds. So with this raise, I figured she had a strong hand because she was playing relatively, not nitty, but just a little tight, not playing too much up to this point. So I was hoping that she would call or 5-bet over my raise. So I bet to 20 big blinds. She obliged with a 5-bet jam, and of course I called. As soon as I called, she groaned, and she goes, "You have pocket aces?" I said, "Yep," and I turned them over, and she showed me pocket kings, quite a bit of a cooler for her, you know. The short stack shover, he showed 9-7 suited, which is a great hand to play here. I can't fault him for that. 3.5 big blind shove, 9-7 suited. I would do that all day long, you know. The flop came 10-9-3. So the short stack flopped a pair. Of course, he had some outs with two pair or trips. But the turn came a 10, pairing the board, giving me two pair, giving everybody two pair. So the only way I would lose is to trips. And the river blanked, no king, no nine. So I didn't triple up. I earned a ton of chips right there. And I was up to roughly 17K after this hand. So I was over a 3x starting stack within only the second level. It was awesome. I was off to a great start. Beyond this, I kept chipping up and up, and then in level four, another great hand happened where I knocked out another player with my top pair top kicker on the flop when he shoved with his flush draw. The draw didn't get there, and this vaulted me up to 30k in chips before the first break. And this was great. I made it to the first break with 6 times starting stack. I was super pumped, and I told myself that it's still one hand at a time, and that I needed to still make the best decision possible with every opportunity if I was going to cash, because it's really easy to spew off chips when you end up being the big stack at the table. When we returned to level 5, I had 30,350 chips, and this was the most I'd have for the rest of the day. I took a big hit later on when my pocket jacks, they were called by my opponent going all in with ace king, and she rivered an ace on me. But it was okay, because I just went from 30k to 20k at the 200-400 chip level, or 200-400 blinds level, so I was still sitting pretty with 50 big blinds. And that's the thing about tournaments, you know, you've got to put everything in perspective to help you keep your composure. I tried to look at the situation like I had 50 big blinds, not like I just lost 25 big blinds, you know? And it wasn't a big roller coaster ride, but from this point on, my stack went up and down here and there, and when we made the money in level 12, I had 15 big blinds, and the blinds were 800, 1600. And the bubble was cool in that it only lasted for one hand when it came to hand for hand. The tournament paid out, or this particular flight paid out 595 players, which was a full 60 tables in the room. With so many tables there at the blinds so high, there were so many short stacks. It was awesome. One hand when it was hand for hand, bubble broken. It was great. I loved it. Oh, and I haven't mentioned it yet, but at my table, I had quite a few poker pros. I got to see some great aggressive actions taking down a lot of different pots. One player named Katie Lindsay, she was being dealt some great hands, but she used them to almost run over the entire table. I never got into any conflicts with her because I was in position on her. She was like 3 seats to my right, but I don't know how many people she knocked out. Seriously, she chipped up so well by using a lot of aggression while catching a lot of hands. And there was also a great Brazilian player there. His name was Bruno Politano, and thankfully I had position on him. He was on my direct right, so I was able to avoid lots of his aggression as well. And One thing to note for everyone out there, often when the bubble bursts, players start getting knocked out like crazy because, hey, we're in the money, great, I can now shove with my 5, my 7, my 3 big blinds, that kind of a thing. And in big fields like this, you really need to not get stupid and don't start just shoving randomly. The min cash was $833, and by staying alive and playing patiently for another 2 hours, I moved up the ladder to $1,366. They say you should always play for the win, and I agree with that. If a play is positive EV, you should be making it. But you want to pay attention to those pay jumps, because if we're going a small EV edge, if it'll earn you a few more $100 with a pay jump, it's totally worth it to forego that edge. Don't make that play. And let me tell you right now about my bust out hand. I got moved to seat 5 of a new table with some super big stacks to the table. And, oh, by the way, I was the only one from my original table to make the money. Everybody, by the time level 12 came around, everybody was knocked out. I was the only one. Everyone there, the other 9 players, had been moved from other tables. So I felt pretty good about that. You know, the sole survivor from table 190, 195, whatever it was. Bruno got moved to my table. He was to the right of me. I had position on him, but seated to my direct left was Chris Mormon. And you all know him, I'm sure. He had a rail of friends watching him play. He was in the 20 big blind range, so all of his plays were timely shoves in later position, either with decent hands or just trying to pick up the blinds and antes, you know. Anyway, I had just doubled up with Ace-King versus King-4, but then the blinds went up, and now I was down to 5 big blinds. It was folded to me, and I had Ace-3 offsuit in the cutoff, if I remember right. So, of course, I shoved. Mormon, he re-ISO-shoved with Ace-10 offsuit. And, of course, Ace-10 held up against my Ace-3, and he knocked me out. So, for the day, I actually ended up going out in 230th place out of 3,966 runners. So, I was actually in the final 6% of the field. Pretty awesome. And overall for the tournament, after flight F went later on, I took a look at WSOP.com and found out I finished 1,090th overall within the tournament. So I'm super stoked about my results, and I'm looking forward to a better placing next year, for sure. So with all this poker play, not only did I play those 2 flights of the Colossus, but I've played quite a few other, like, you know, the daily deep stacks and some smaller tournaments and stuff, and a lot of cash games. And some lessons that I learned, I added these to my Evernote sheet that I talked about last week. This is one of the lines in my Evernote sheet. It says, "I'm a thief." And basically what this means is, hey, my job is to be stealing blinds and to be stealing antes as much as possible. The next line that I added to my Evernote is, I'm a hunter. Well, I am a hunter in that my job is also to hunt the worst players at the table and do my best to get into pots with them. I actually did this quite a bit, and I specifically made a lot of calls, either from the blinds or from the later positions, calling when somebody weaker raised just to get into hand with them. I called with like Jack-4 suited and 10-7 suited, stuff that I normally wouldn't call, especially when I'm kind of getting to the shorter stack of a tournament. But I'm a hunter. My goal is to play in as many hands as I can with the weaker players. The next line I added to my document is, ask yourself, what's my edge over these players, and what's my game plan versus each of them? This is something I've always just mentally tried to do, but I actually added this to my Word document because it is so important. If I know my edge over this player, over that player, if I know that seat 5 gives up too quickly post-flop, then I should get into hands with him, and I should be betting post-flop when he checks to me, that kind of thing, you know? So as long as I know my edge and I can make a game plan versus them, I'm more likely to succeed. Another line I added to my Evernote document is, pay attention to every hand and learn from showdowns. This is obvious. The best place to learn is from showdowns. Once you see a showdown, you see what a player had throughout the hand, you replay the hand in your mind and figure out, hey, he had a flush draw on the flop, but he check raised. He check raised big with his flush draw. Or maybe a different player, oh, they had top pair, but they check called on the flop and the turn, and they finally led out on the river. What's going on here? You know, so you can learn a lot from showdowns. Those are so important to pay attention to. And the final new line that I added to my Evernote document, it says, don't show your hand unless absolutely necessary. Muck the losing hand and don't give opponents free info. So this is obvious, but it's something that I never really did. Even if like somebody bet and I made the call and they turn over the better hand, I would often turn over my hand But by doing so, I give away way too much information to my opponents. So I started midway through the tournament, I started to muck the losing hand instead of turning it over. Or even when it gets checked on the river and everybody checks around, I would wait and not show my hand until the dealer said everybody show, or until I had to show because I had the winning hand or whatever the case is. If I had a losing hand, I started to muck it. And I really recommend you all do the same thing, because your more astute opponents, they'll pay attention to what you show, play back the hand like I just said, and they will learn from your showdown. So don't let them. Alrighty, so real quick, my plan for next year before we end this episode. Next year, I'm planning on going for 2 weeks. I'll drive into Vegas and I'll stay somewhere off the strip. Maybe like at, you know, an extended stay with a kitchen. I'll bring my blender and I'll bring my extra monitor and my microphone to make kind of an on-the-road office. And I'll also have another meetup planned as well. So, and one of the reasons why I'm going to be going for 2 weeks this time, or next time, is because I learned from Dr. Trisha Carter and some other people I spoke to, during the World Series, there are so many great events. If you go to the show notes page for today, you'll find a few different links. Like, one of them is to a Card Players 2017 World Series of Poker page, where it lists all the different tournaments, all the great value tournaments happening around Vegas. There's also another link there for a Poker News poker calendar within Las Vegas. It shows you a ton of stuff. And there's also another link there for a 2+2 thread, where this one player puts out a really good poker calendar in Excel that you can look at to help you choose. So there are so many really good value tournaments, anywhere from $100 to like $500 buy-ins with 60-minute levels all throughout Vegas. So next year, I'm going to go spend some time at the Rio, but I'll spend more time at a lot of those other casinos like Planet Hollywood, like the Venetian possibly. Oh, Gold Nugget has some good stuff, and the Aria has good tournaments as well. So next year, I'm going to be playing at more places around the strip.
Challenge!
Here's my challenge to you for this episode. Get out there and play a live tournament. They can be a lot of fun and good learning experiences. Take your online game and see if you can apply it to the live realm. Now it's your turn to take action and do something positive for your poker game.
Now get it on!
Of course, this episode isn't complete until you head to the show notes page at www.smartpokerstudy.com/pod142. You can go there for links to everything I discussed today and to find out ways you can support the podcast, just like these awesome people. Philippe Verhelst supported me on Patreon at the $10 level. Thank you so much, Philippe. I've enjoyed having you on my webinars before. You asked some great questions. I've responded to your stuff via email. Keep it up, Philippe. Keep asking me for help. I'll keep answering it, and thank you very much for that support. And I have two people who recently purchased the How to Study Poker webinar. Number one was Charles Ogle. Thank you so much, Charles, and I gave you another webinar of your choice for it. Thank you very much. Take the time and study both of those. Also, Julaki purchased the How to Study Poker webinar. So for the both of you and everybody else who has one of my webinars, what I want you to do is go through it, take notes, and then do your best to apply everything that I teach you in the webinars to your game, as well as to your off-the-felt studies. If you just watch a webinar without taking notes, without trying to apply the stuff to your game, you're really only doing, 10% of the work. You know, where you really get most benefit out of any kind of training, any webinar, any book you read, any article, any podcast, any video that you watch, where you get the most benefit is where you put things into action. So whether it's my webinar or somebody else's, pay attention to every single word and make an action list for yourself of what you can do in your next play session and study session. All right, and I got a great review from Pablo Garza on my book. He said, 5 stars, great book, can't wait for volume 2. This book is fantastic. There are many great nuts and bolts books and other forms of poker info out there, but this one-of-a-kind gem teaches you how to get the most out of them. I just finished 7 days of studying 3-bets using the techniques and habits talked about in the book, and my understanding has grown immensely because of it. I have been studying poker since I started playing in 1999, but have never been this effective at learning. Even better, the knowledge has been directly incorporated into my game. I've read so many poker books, and far too often it goes in one ear and out the other without ever actually improving my game. But with Mr. Matsuhashi's suggestions, I have become a much better learner. To see what an excellent teacher Sky is, go to smartpokerstudy.com or listen to the Smart Poker Study podcast. Then buy the book. It will help give you the tools to transform your game. Thank you so much, Pablo Garza. Man, I don't know if there's any way to say or to give a better review than that. Thank you so much. That is incredible. I'm glad my book and study techniques has already helped you to learn the 3-bet game. All right. Thank you very much. So if you want to support the show like these gnarly poker peeps, visit the show notes for links to show that support. Thank you so much for listening today. If you can type in the words Smart Poker Study, you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, Amazon, and YouTube. Or send an email to sky@smartpokerstudy.com. Alrighty, poker people. Next week in episode number 143, I promise I'll return with another episode in the Poker Math MED series. Word of mouth is the best advertising. It's the only way the show's gonna grow. So thank you for sharing the show with other poker people. I love your sharing and caring. Until next time, study smart, play much, and make your next session the best one yet.